Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
The Athletic.
Son. Oh, it's a great ball! It goes all the way through, and Heung-min Son, for the second home game running in the Premier League, has scored. And then number seven is congratulated by his teammates.
Hello, everybody. I'm Danny Kelly, and I'm your host for The View from the Lane, the Athletic's Tottenham Hotspur podcast. It's all Spurs, all killer and no filler. I'm joined on the podcast today by The Athletic's Jack Pitt-Brook to reflect on Spurs' third straight win to start the Premier League season with a bang. We'll get into that game shortly, though, but first, Jack, we need to discuss one of the more important issues of the weekend. Last week on the podcast, we had a lot of discussion about Gareth Bale and his revolutionary rowing machine, the robot. And I've only just worked out that it's a pun, robot. And Jack, with your unerring diligence to duty, I understand you have now tried, tested and triumphed over the robot.
Yeah, so I went to one of the robots' gyms in Shoreditch to do their kind of Saturday morning rowing class.
Oh.
On Saturday. And when you do it, that Gareth Bale interview in The Guardian that we were talking about the other week, it all makes sense because, you know, Gareth Bale's famous slogan, it's time to hashtag switch on, is literally written on all the walls of the gym. And the instructor wore a vest saying, it's time to hashtag switch on. And he was repeatedly telling me to switch on as I tried, you know, with some difficulty to complete the rowing exercises.
I have no insider knowledge of the world of football. I've made strenuous efforts while making my living out of talking about it not to become a football insider. And I had lots of rows on Twitter after that piece with Gareth came out. People saying, I was saying the rowing machine thing is so ridiculous. People saying, what are you saying? He might genuinely like rowing. And I eventually have to say, he's got a rowing machine company, the slogan for which is hashtag switch on. He's never seen this Q&A. It's his PR. And it was actually a deadening experience because people, bless them, they want to argue with you, but they come armed with only their fists. You need facts as well. How did you get on with the rowing machine, would you say?
It was hard work. It was really hard work. And it was done in a kind of, the session was set up almost as if it were in a nightclub, so in a very dark room with very loud music, and as in a nightclub, everyone was, you know, sweaty and tired, but which kind of added to the physical challenge of the experience. But we kind of got through it in the end.
Okay, so it was a dark, sweaty nightclub. Any sign of Michael Gove?
No.
Okay.
No sign of Michael Gove.
One there for the politics fans among you.
He's a QPR fan, isn't he?
I wouldn't know. What politicians and their ever-shifting football allegiances, I try to keep out of that as well. Well done for having the... I mean, in all seriousness, Jack, did you do that just to see what the fuss was about?
No, so my personal trainer took me and the other members of my fitness group there as a sort of as a fun day out. And it was fun. I did very much enjoy it, but I also felt like I got a window into sort of Gareth Bale's rowing empire.
Right, people, Spurs fans, and why else would you be anything else joining us on this podcast? We'll be saying get on with it because, of course, we must allow ourselves a small moment of triumphant crowing here. And I'm not one for saying, oh, it's only three games and all the rest of it, because life is so full of kicks in the pants. Why wouldn't you celebrate every small triumph? So, yes, Spurs are top of the league after three games. And the manager has made the best start of any Spurs manager since Arthur Rowe, who took over the team in 1948, got them promoted in 1950 and won the title in England in 1951. Though they've still got some way to go to equal the double winning team, who I think won 10 or 11 on the spin at the start of the season, a record matched by Manchester City a couple of years ago. It's wonderful. They're top of the table. I don't get past halfway down the table now, so I've no idea where the other North London team is, none at all. But Jack, I think it's right, having celebrated it and hooted, I think we have to ask ourselves the question, are they actually playing that well? What does the evidence of our own eyes tell us? You were at the game.
Yeah, I was at the game. I think they're playing well in some senses. So they're playing well in the sense that they're not conceding goals. They're very, very good at the back. Nuno said after the game that clean sheets were the beginning of everything, which I thought was a good insight into his approach. They're good in terms of, you know, they're very coordinated when they haven't got the ball. They're pressing. Nuno spoke about that. And you can just tell what they're trying to do. They've got this narrow front three. They've got a very hard-working midfield. Dele and Højbjerg get through a lot of running to press the opposition and make it difficult for them. So they're good at that too. What they're not good at, Danny, is creating chances, really.
No.
Because they don't. You know, Son's goal was fairly lucky, I think. The keeper should really have kept
it out.
It was
a mess for the goalkeeper, wasn't it?
Yeah. After that, I thought they had enough chances to go 2-0 up. They got a bit more dangerous when Lucas Moura came on. He started running at defenders. But they're not really yet at the stage of creating a stream of chances from open play.
I totally take what you're saying, but it also happens to be a fact that Beckman made more saves than any goalkeeper has made so far in the Premier League this season. But that to me is a reflection, I'd love to get your view on this, that we've gone into a new place in football, that the absolute supremacy of possession stats means that people don't shoot and put the ball into the area as often as they used to do. People don't buy the famous ticket for the lottery. They're almost afraid to give the ball away by having a go. So you're not going to see teams peppering the opposition, Manchester City accepting again, with shots at goal, are you?
Yeah, I think teams are probably a bit more reluctant to shoot from distance, but equally that's borne out by, you know, statistics show that having pot shots in 25 yards, the ball is so unlikely to go in that you're probably better off passing it to someone else who might find another way through. I just think the way that Spurs play, they're not really set up to create chances. You know, they've got a lot of the time in that 4-3-3, Tanganga's the kind of overlap option. And then, you know, we've spoken about what a fantastic young defender he is. He's not really very good going forward yet.
No.
Maybe he will be, but he's not now. Højbjerg keeps on getting into good positions. And again, he's a brilliant defensive midfielder. Lots of running, great engine. But he's not David Silva. He's not Christian Eriksen, is he?
He's not a natural finisher as the trade.
He's not going to play a genius pass that nobody else on the pitch could spot. So I just think that they're quite mechanical, Tottenham, at the moment. And they just my own view is that they need a little bit of something extra, something different in that midfield.
This would be mine as well. And no criticism of any of the three individuals involved. A midfield three of Højbjerg, Dele Alli and Oliver Skip. It's too much the same. It's all one flavour, isn't it? And we'll see if they can do something about that. I mean, of course, this was never meant to be the case. And we'll get on to the continuing mystery of Tanguy and Ndombele, because he was supposed to be that X factor. I mean, it just hasn't worked as yet. You mentioned the goal. It was perhaps one of the softer goals that Son Heung-min will get in his career. His 200th Premier League game for Spurs, they paid, 20-odd million for him, or perhaps a little more. I can't imagine there have been many better bargains in the Premier League history. He is a fantastic bloke, a fantastic player. And if I'm being honest, I was slightly surprised to see him signing his new contract quite so easily.
Yeah, so what's amazing about Son is that even in his first season, he didn't really play that much. And he famously, in the summer of 2016, he really wanted to go. Like, he wanted to go back to Germany, and he asked Pochettino if he could go. And they talked about it a lot, and then I think Pochettino decided, no, I want you to stay. And, you know, 5 years on, he's now a modern legend of the club who has won people over, not just for his brilliant performances, but also, you know, it's a bit of a cliche, but he plays the game the right way. He's enthusiastic. He's a very honest person who wears his heart on his sleeve, and the fans, you know, the fans have really warmed to that warmth and that honesty. In terms of staying at the club, my take on this really is that I think Son is the type of player who, if it wasn't for COVID, might have had some other offers, in the sense that COVID obviously hasn't hurt the market for players like Ronaldo, Messi, Mbappe.
Yeah.
At the very, very top end
what
of the game.
What you might call as the social media Grealish. Players. Yeah.
Yeah. But the merely brilliant, the merely very good players, like Son, for example, there's not quite so much market for those players right now. And you kind of see that a little bit with Harry Kane this summer, who obviously wanted to go, didn't get the offers he was expecting to get. There is part of me that thinks that if it wasn't for COVID, someone like a Bayern Munich, for example, or Real Madrid would have had a look at Son and thought, fantastic, you know, 60 million quid, we'll go and get him. But obviously, that hasn't happened because that level of team just above Spurs don't really have any money at the moment. So I think it's worked really well for both parties that Tottenham have given Son this big new deal. They've secured Son until well into his 30s.
Yeah, he's there for the rest of his career now. And I noticed that Ruben Dias, brilliant defender at Manchester City, has signed the dreaded 6-year contract today. I bet he's got all the I's dotted and the T's crossed after what's happened to, how can we put it, poor Harry Kane. Over the summer.
I think on Son, sorry, one more thing on Son. I think what's one thing that I really like about Son, or that I think is very important, is given that Harry Kane's gone in, you know, had this obviously pretty difficult and stressful summer experience, Son, I think, has kind of stepped into, he feels like a bit more of a leader on the team. You know, he's the guy that gets the fans going. He's the one who always does the post-match media, that sort of thing. You can see him rallying his teammates on the pitch. And I feel like, given that Kane has not quite been able to be that leader for obvious reasons at the moment, Son has, and it just underlines Son's importance to Tottenham, both in a playing capacity and a non-playing capacity.
Yeah, I would make the point. I had noticed too that Son was doing all of the post-match interviews. They obviously can't let Harry Kane in front of a camera until the transfer window is actually closed on Tuesday night. Until then, Harry can't be allowed anywhere near a microphone or a camera. A worrying, maybe not worrying, I don't know the details. You're probably more in on this than me. Last night after the game, Christian Romero, second highest transfer fee ever for a Spurs player, hasn't started a Premier League game yet, photographed on what looked a very luxuriously appointed private jet, and with his teammate Giovanni Lo Celso and two of Aston Villa's, Buendia and Martinez, two of their Argentinian players, ignoring the Premier League edict and the club edict about not going to South America for the World Cup qualifiers, waving goodbye with a cheery shake of the hand. And I've worked out, unless I've got this wrong, if they play in the three World Cup qualifiers, of course they're squeezing an extra one in because they didn't do the qualifiers during the made-up South American Championship of the summer, these boys will come back and miss four Tottenham games unless they've done some deal with the club, the government, or their own FA.
Yeah, it's a mess. I think they're assuming that Lo Celso and Romero go to all three breaks. I don't think they're going to play that much for Tottenham between now and December because it's not, you know, it's not like having 10 days out of the team being banned where you could train, for example. They're going to be 10 days in a Heathrow Ibis, unable to do the training work required because it's a government mandated quarantine program for people coming back from red list countries. So, and look, there's some speculation that they might only play the first two games, the Brazil game, then come back. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I don't know that. I can't confirm that at this point. And even if they did that, it would still be hugely disruptive to their season, you know, and it is going to damage their availability for Tottenham in a big way.
Yeah, and I mean, other clubs no doubt will have, presumably all the Argentine players in the Premier League got together and said, this is what we're going to do. I can't imagine these four have just decided over one of those strange cups with the silver straw that they drink. Is it mate it's called?
Yeah, so I think it was initially Emi Martinez and Buendia who first went public about this. I mean, to be honest, I mean, obviously, it's a complete mess and it's incredibly disruptive for Tottenham and a huge pain in the ass for Nuno. I do have a lot of sympathy with Lo Celso and Romero. And I know that, you know, Tottenham pay their wages and Tottenham pay them very well for what they do. You know, that goes without saying. But particularly in that part of the world, like playing for your country, if you're Argentina, is so important. And on top of that, this is probably going to be Messi's last World Cup. You know, a 39-year-old Lionel Messi might go to USA 2026. But this is going to be Messi's last World Cup as an established top player. The Argentina team have just won Messi his first Copa America, which was a huge achievement after I think Messi had lost three or four Copa finals with Argentina. And I just think that helping Messi get to the Qatar World Cup next year is hugely important. It's And I'm sure if you're Lo Celso and Romero, you think getting Messi to Qatar is more important, frankly, than even these Tottenham games in the next few months. And I know that that kind of sucks for Tottenham because they pay these guys and much more than the AFA do. But that, I think that's just kind of the reality of the situation. It's very, very, it's difficult for any player to say no to their country. And I'm sure we'll see similar versions of this story with other players who play for different countries in Latin America. But I think just the specifics of Argentina and a 34-year-old Lionel Messi, just and the fact that Argentina started pretty badly. You know, they've won, I think they've won three and drawn three so far, which means that they're kind of miles behind Brazil. And, you know, if they have a few more bad results, then they could be at risk of not going. And for Argentina, if Argentina don't qualify for Qatar, it is a tragedy for football. And I think that Romero and Lo Celso feel a strong sense of responsibility, not just to Argentinian football, but to football everywhere, that Messi has to be at the World Cup. So I do sympathise with them on that.
I'm sure that's a view owned by PSG and therefore Lionel Messi's new Qatari owners. And if there was any danger of Argentina not qualifying for the World Cup, I suspect just as moving the World Cup was found a way around that, I suspect Lionel Messi, even if Argentina finished bottom of the qualifying group, I guarantee you they would take part in the World Cup in Qatar, even if they have to extend the number of teams who are allowed into it, Jack. And we'll see what the club has to say about this, because they may have done some deal. But as you rightly say, there are three of these international breaks between now and Christmas, which means that Christian Romero may not start his Spurs career at all. How lucky are we then that Sanchez and Dier, so derided at the end of last season, are now apparently world beaters? I'm glad to see them. I think there's decent footballers inside both those lads. They've just gone completely off the boil in the last 8 or 9 months.
I remember when Mourinho used to say that the Spurs couldn't keep clean sheets because of what he called the individual characteristics of their defenders. And it turns out the individual characteristics of Davinson Sanchez, Colombia international, Eric Dier, England international, are not actually that bad.
With my Hackney Marsh's coaching qualifications, I'll say this. Unless you are something extraordinary, defending the edge of your own six-yard box inevitably leads to mistakes because you must be a nervous wreck. At least they've moved out the penalty area now. And let's have a quick break. When we come back, I'll remind people, we're recording this on Monday sort of midday, and therefore we've got about a day and a half before the transfer window. Let me just check my contract. Yes, I have to say it slams shut. And we'll talk about what Spurs have and haven't done in the transfer window. You're listening to The View from the Lane with me, Danny Kelly, and Jack Pitbrook.
Hello, I'm Mark Chapman. This is what we've got planned for you across the Athletic Podcast Network this season. The Ornstein and Chapman podcast has been rebranded as the Athletic Football Podcast. We'll release 4 episodes across the week as our journalists bring you the very best insight into the biggest stories in football and the business of sport. Michael Cox will continue to bring you the smartest analysis of all the big games in the Athletic Football Tactics podcast. Adam Hurry will now host 2 episodes of the Football Clichés podcast every single week with his usual take on the game. There's a brand new Athletic FPL podcast with our fantasy football expert, the FPL General, giving you all the advice you need to stay ahead of your mates and top of the FPL rankings. And the Athletic Podcast Network is also home now to a host of club-specific shows, some of which are going to be releasing multiple episodes every week. And we're now your destination, don't forget, for the Totally Football Show with James Richardson and the Totally Football League Show. And that is it. And we can't fit any more in. All you've got to do is search for The Athletic in your podcast provider of choice or go to our podcast section on the Athletic app. Not surprisingly, with all of the stuff that I've just mentioned, The Athletic is now the world's biggest football podcast network.
Okay, if you open your own window and listen carefully out the window, you'll hear the sound of creaking. That is, of course, the transfer window getting ready to close. Just a day or so to go. Jack, I'm going to ask you a simple question, which is, what more business can Spurs expect to do with your insider knowledge of the world of football via your prestigious employment at The Athletic? But the background to my question is this. If I include people like Troy Parrott, Spurs have let 9 international players go in this transfer window, either back to their own clubs like Gareth Bale, or sold them on or loaned them out. 9. In replacement, they've got a reserve goalkeeper, a kid winger who may or may not make the grade, and a fully-fledged Argentinian international who's going to spend until between now and Christmas, as we discussed, on aeroplanes back and forth to Buenos Aires. My question about what more business they can expect to do is because secretly, I don't think Spurs have done enough.
Well, I don't know. I think they might have, I think they're getting close to having done enough, just because I think the issues with the Spurs squad isn't as bad as it's looked for the last year or two. That's always been my view. It's also a squad which has real quality, certainly up front, and some pretty good, some very good midfielders who've not really shown enough for Spurs, Lo Celso and Ndombele. Dele's basically not really done anything for the last 2 or 3 years. So there's a lot of talent there. I think it just needed a thinning out, which it's got. It needed a bit of extra depth and a bit of extra youth, which it's got, in Gallini and Gil. And it needed extra quality in defence, which it's got in Romero. I think the one other thing it needed was a top-class right-back, and that, I think, is still the outstanding issue. And, of course, you know, if Romero isn't available for the next few months, then that signing isn't looking quite as smart. But I don't think there are a million... I know there's frustration that from fans who want another 2 or 3 players in, and, of course, it would be better if they could get another 2 in. Maybe they will do. But I don't think it's quite as... I'm not quite as down on the transfer business as some people.
No, I wouldn't say I was down there, but I'm slightly I have one raised eyebrow, brackets the left, actually. I find it easier to do. They did need thinning that squad. It did need thinning out. And yet the ones who would have been favourites for out-thinning, people like Aurier, are still there. And I've got to say, and we'll talk about Paratici very, very soon, the cheek of him offering Barcelona Serge Aurier when they're after Emerson Royal, incidentally, my favourite name for a footballer currently in employment, so I would like him to come to Spurs just because he's called Emerson Royal. Paratici obviously understands that football is chaos and you might just offer Barcelona Serge Aurier and just go, oh yeah, fantastic, thank you. In this case, they have not fallen for his trick, which leaves, I think, one of the ones that was obviously going to be a real problem to get off the books was Tanguy Ndombele. I'm not even sure I want him to go because it's clear, 1 game in 5, that there is a very, very interesting firework line breaker of a footballer in there. But of course, the Premier League demands so much more of you, and it's that Tanguy can't seem to get going. But if he stays, now the fact that he hasn't played a minute of pre-season and not been allowed on the pitch for any of these games, including European games, Nuno's going to have to change his tune and at least try and get something out of him, isn't he? Because you can't have a 200 grand a week person just sitting around the club sulking.
I think there is going to be... I'm sure we will see an Ndombele reintegration in the next few weeks. Clearly, Tottenham have been trying to find a new club for him over the course of the summer, as they have with Aurier and Sissoko. Sissoko, they've succeeded, selling him to Watford. Aurier, as we're currently recording, Tuesday, 2 p.m. As it stands, Aurier is still a Spurs player. I kind of feel they will just find something, but they haven't done yet. Whereas in Ndombele, they tried, but they couldn't find one. You know, the fact is, he's on 200 grand a week. If he'd gone out on loan, there would have been an expensive loan fee, a few million pounds. It wouldn't have been an easy deal to do. And just teams sort of turned their nose up at him. So I think Spurs decided over the weekend that he would stay. And now they really have to make the most of it. I'm sure we'll see him slowly, probably back in the Europa Conference League first, then maybe challenging in the Premier League games. But as we were saying earlier, the Spurs do lack a bit of magic in the middle at the moment, don't they?
They do.
It's all very functional. And I mean, look, I'm on the pro Ndombele side of the argument. Mm-hmm. I'm an Ndombeliever, as they say.
Yeah.
But I totally accept the case against him as well, and why some people haven't been impressed by his contribution over the 2 years, which has been patchy at best. But I would like to see him back in the team. I think he offers something a bit different and a bit special.
I would like to see him back in the team as well, Jack, but you can't put him in the team. I mean, I've got to be careful here because it's so easy to characterise players. I don't see him training. In matches, he is strong, but he is not fit. He doesn't look like he has the physical wherewithal to play 75 minutes of Premier League football at the kind of pace, and this season in particular, when there's a little bit more tackling going on, at the kind of rough and tumble that's necessary. And I don't know how you get that back into a player or into a player. And we shall see what they do about it. You mentioned Moussa Sissoko there. I was delighted that both he and Danny Rose got a chance at White Hart Lane at the Spurs Stadium to get to say goodbye to the Spurs fans. I resent it. I hate it when players leave during the summer without having a chance to get to say goodbye to the fans, and particularly with the pandemic and nobody being in the grounds for 18 months. And I knew that, you know, Sissoko has been a good servant to the club. Perhaps his form fell away dramatically in the past 9 or 10 months, which you could say about virtually every single non-Son and Kane player at Spurs. And Danny Rose, for all that he's got into a PR tug of war with Daniel Levy and all the rest of it, and with Mourinho, he has been fantastic over a decade at Spurs. And there were times during that when he was clearly the best left back in the league. And I really, really wanted him to get the kind of applause that he got from the Spurs fans.
Yeah, I was delighted to see that. It was really, it's the kind of thing that's been totally lost over COVID. And it's fortunate, really, that this fixture occurred when it did. And that both Rose and Sissoko were in the Watford squad. Like, Sissoko got a huge, he got a lot of applause during the course of the game. There was one moment where in classic Sissoko fashion, he sort of leant back and hit a shot that almost cleared the stadium and ended up at Bruce Grove Station. And he was warmly applauded. And then at the end, he did a bit of a walk. When the Spurs players were walking around the pitch, Sissoko came back out, as did Danny Rose, who was an unused substitute for the game.
Yeah.
And that was great because, as you say, they're both, you know, they both contribute an awful lot to Tottenham over a long period of time. I think Rose is probably slightly more fondly remembered, but just because he was there for longer. He was there as a boy. He was probably a more talented player, if we're honest. But Sissoko...
His debut against Arsenal?
Yeah, yeah. And also Rose was an integral part of the brilliant, brilliant Pochettino team in their peak years. Whereas Sissoko, not the most gifted player that you'll ever see at Tottenham, but gave absolutely everything that he could to the team. And was very important in that run to the 2019 Champions League final, having to do all the midfield work single-handedly, basically, and just putting in the hard work and keeping the show on the road. So I think Sissoko is, in his own way, an incredibly admirable footballer and also a very honest and popular guy, as is Danny Rose in a slightly different way.
Sure, and as I say, clubs... Let these fellas move on without any regard to the relationship they've had with the fans. And it was an unusual situation that just allowed those two to get clapped off the field. Now, we started talking on this podcast about the robot, but I know that was only one of two fantastic things that caught your eye over the past few days. We talked about Fabio Paratici and whether or not he's had a good, bad or indifferent first transfer window. And of course, so much changes in the last day. We'll see about that. But I sometimes forget, Jack, of course, that you're a generation, probably two generations younger than me. And to your observant eye, other things gleam and glint. And you noticed he was wearing a fantastic scarf at White Hart Lane.
Yeah, so not many scarves being worn at Tottenham yesterday. It was still August bank holiday weekend. But Paratici was wearing this huge kind of light brown, I think it would have been woolen, scarf. It's the kind of thing that, you know, a proper football man probably wouldn't have worn. You know, I wouldn't have expected to see Harry Redknapp or Tim Sherwood wearing a scarf like that.
Oh, well, Sherwood has got that gilet, to be fair.
He has got that gilet. I mean, look, you know, what the fuck do I know about fashion? Nothing. I'm a football journalist.
What's your suspicion, Jack, that it cost 300 quid in Burlington Arcade?
I think add another zero to that. I don't know. What do I know? I'm wearing a Dulwich Hamlet T-shirt.
Yeah.
It struck me as quite a distinctive item.
So Spurs have struggled their way with that 3-0 win at home into the group stage of the Conference League. I am not one for mocking the Conference League. I think if you're in the competition, you should try and do your best to win it. I know it's a massive distraction, but Spurs have got lots of gifted reserve players and young players, and they should give it their best shot. With that in mind, I watched the draw for the Conference League group stages with slightly bitter nails. And of course, it turns out Spurs are on the equivalent in the Conference League of the Group of Death, by which I mean, Jack, that I recognised two of the three clubs that came out of the hat. For the record, Vitesse Arnhem was one of those. Rennes was another. But the one I didn't recognise, I've got to be honest, and of course I do a European football show, so I should be ashamed of myself, was Enes Mura of Slovenia. And we've had a little bit of fun, actually, before the podcast started, trying to make links to these clubs between Spurs and they. The best we can do for the Slovenian lot is to say they share a name with Lucas Moura. So we'll leave it at that.
I've never heard of this Slovenian team. I'm not a Slovenian football expert.
No.
I mean, I probably am by the standards of, you know, the general public in the UK.
A proud boast, Jack.
But I'd never heard of Enes Mura, nor of the town where they're from, which Wikipedia tells me is Murska Sobota, which is basically up in the far top right-hand corner of Slovenia, near to Hungary. I mean, I don't know if you've ever been to Slovenia, Danny.
It's no.
A really, really beautiful country. Mm-hmm. It's fantastic. I would totally recommend it to anyone. But this is not, you know, Ljubljana. It's a long way on the other side.
I presume it's in some sort of disputed territory, because post the breakup of Yugoslavia and before that, the Habsburg Empire, all these towns, cities, rivers and valleys are all disputed.
Yeah, so Wikipedia says it was in the Kingdom of Hungary until 1918.
Yeah.
So that's why it has a Hungarian name and a German name as well, as I think lots of, you know, some places in that part of the world do as well. Well, my big question really with this kind of draw is, can fans go? Like, I genuinely don't know what the travel restrictions are with Slovenia at the moment, but I do know as a football fan that going to obscure foreign games in the group stage of European competition is one of life's great delights.
Yeah, of course.
You know, going to somewhere you'd never otherwise.
New place, course, you know, new culture, new food, new
Barcelona,
people.
Going to Napoli, Madrid, whatever, is fantastic in its own way and glamorous and fun. And I know Spurs fans will have enjoyed that over the years. But going to a game like this is one for the real heads.
Yeah.
And you get a better, you know, you get a kind of quite a magical experience sometimes. So I just hope for the sake of the Tottenham fans that Slovenia, you know, might be letting in vaccinated Brits.
We can contact Christian Romero on Instagram. He seems to be the local expert on who can travel where, what, why and when. We did find links between the two other clubs. I think you found a link between Spurs and Rennes. Is that right?
Well, so I found a not quite real link, which was that I found someone who played for Rennes and almost played for Tottenham.
Okay.
And that was Ousmane Dembele, the former Celtic and I think now Lyon,
yeah, scored forward, at the weekend, yeah.
Who nearly went to Tottenham, then his move collapsed in the Pochettino era. So had he gone to Spurs, he would have been a rare player to have played for Rennes and Tottenham.
Yeah, and I think I could do the Vitesse Arnhem one.
But there is another.
Oh, sorry.
There is another
An
player.
Actual one, yes.
An actual player,
good.
Who our producer Tom.
Yes.
Do you want to give it away?
No, you say who it was, and I'll,
okay.
I'll do it.
So for those playing along at home,
yeah.
This guy was a defender from the mid-2000s. Clue, he's not French.
Yep.
And the other clue is he scored a famous goal.
Yeah, and so we worked out from that it was Erik Edman, bless him, the Swedish defender who played for Spurs, then went to Rennes, and then perhaps not so happily came back to England to play for Wigan, played left back for Wigan in that famous game at the old White Hart Lane where Spurs ran up 9. Wigan got 1. Incidentally, that was a handball. I don't hold these things, I don't keep them in, but their goal was handball. And Jermaine Defoe, if I remember rightly, dribbled past poor Erik 5 times to score his 5 goals. I think I've got the right. It could have been 4, but I think it was 5. And Erik, his contract was torn up by Wigan. I don't think he played for them ever again.
Oh, well.
So Erik Edman is another link between Spurs and Rennes. And the link between Spurs and Vitesse Arnhem, brace yourselves, Spurs fans of a certain vintage, around the turn of the century, when around Glenn Hoddle's time as manager, when Spurs didn't have the proverbial pot into which to micturate, they had a player called Willem Korsten. And they were always, these very cheap players came, and Glenn would always compare them to Franz Beckenbauer. Oh yeah, this is the Dutch Beckenbauer. Make no mistake about that. Well, Willem was a pretty average player. But I seem to recall that before an injury wrecked his time and his whole career, I think, he got a winning goal against Manchester United. Somebody, again, can put me right on that. How you can do that on a podcast, I have no idea. But I'm just saying it to be democratic. Willem Korsten got one famous winning goal against Manchester United for Spurs, and then he got a terrible injury. And I remember for 2 years after that, he was always on the verge of, you know, getting back in with the out of the training group and into the playing group, but he never seemed to quite make it. So Rennes, Vitesse Arnhem, and Enes Mura, the latter being the most interesting venue, all lined up to play Spurs in this conference.
The other thing that Spurs fans might notice is that Vitesse Arnhem, of course, are closely associated with Chelsea. Over the years, lots of Chelsea players have gone out to Vitesse Arnhem on loan, including Mason Mount, probably most successfully. So Spurs fans, sometimes I think these Europa Conference League games can get a bit over-friendly, but if Spurs fans are looking for a bit of extra spice, then they, you know, they can use the fact that Vitesse Arnhem are the kind of Dutch partner club of Chelsea.
Yeah, Chelsea will probably loan them about 16 brilliant players just prior to the first of the games. We shall see. Jack, listen, I think we've managed to get through in pretty short order most of the issues from the weekend and with the closing of the transfer window, plus rowing machines, plus fashionable scarves. It only leaves me to ask you, really, what have you got in the Athletic currently and what are you working on that we could read in the next few days?
So I'm mainly working on trying to stay on top of what's happened in the last 2 days of the window. You know, it's currently Monday afternoon. In terms of what happens next, well, like I said, it depends on Serge Aurier, really. If Aurier goes, I think they will get him right back. If Aurier doesn't go, then I think that might be it. Maybe I think they would like an attacking player as well, although they have so far not been able to get in another attacking player. So that's it, really. Focusing on the transfer window, and then I'll be off after that doing some covering some of the England games for the during the.
Are you travelling, Jack, or are you going
to
do it from
home? I'm travelling to Warsaw, but not Budapest.
Okay, thank you. Listen, as always, thank you very much indeed, and thank you for doing it in Dulwich Hamlet t-shirt. Is it always Dulwich Hamlet, or do you change to other lower league teams, or are you a Hamlet fan?
I have other t-shirts. I don't just have one t-shirt. When it comes to non-league loyalties, yeah, Dulwich. So I only live not that far away, so since I've been living in South London, I've been going quite a lot, and I do really enjoy it. It's nice,
brilliant
to
club.
Football.
No, it's a brilliant club.
Real football.
I know.
Not that Tottenham isn't real football.
No, no.
But you know what
and
I mean.
And at some stage when we finally get together and have a pint, I'll tell you about somebody I know is a legend over there at the club and has helped to run it for many years, and we're great friends. Thank you very much indeed, Jack. Thank all of you for listening. Don't forget, of course, new listeners and those of you who are regulars on the award-winning View from the Lane podcast. It's out twice a week now, so there's this one, myself and Jack. We'll be joined by at least one other of our spars, our confreres, our confidants for the Thursday edition as well, by which time we'll know who Spurs have got rid of and who Spurs have brought in. We look forward to that as well. Twice a week for the podcast now. Thank you for listening to this one. And don't forget, if you want to hear what Jack is, read what Jack's been talking about in his own writing and anything else, if you're not already a subscriber, you can read those articles by going to theathletic.com/SpursPod. And right now you can sign up for the 33% discount on a full subscription. As I say, we'll be back on Thursday. Thanks such a lot for listening.
The Athletic.